I'd like to begin with a trivia question this morning. Who was Ross Perot's 1992 vice presidential running mate? His name was James Stockdale. He didn't do well in his debate, if you may remember. And I am guilty, like most of the nation, had poking some fun at his expense. But looking afterwards, doing some research on who this was, and the kids left, so I'm going to say this, he was quite a badass. He was a vice admiral in the Navy. He received a Medal of Honor for his leadership in 7 years of internment in a Vietnam POW camp. All right, and if that's not enough, do you know what his middle name was? Bond. That's right, James Bond Stockdale. Now, a couple years back, there was a book for business. It was very hot, From Good to Great, by Jim Collins. And in that, he talks about how some of the companies that on the Fortune 500, how they went from just being an okay kind of, a good company to one of the great ones. It's funny, in retrospect, one of those was Circuit City, so it didn't hit all the... Anyway, in the book, he gives advice to any organization. It was actually pretty well received within church communities as well, because it just recommended some things about organizations that can do something well to try and get this success. So Stockdale's name came up because Collins found that this attitude by Stockdale when he was a POW was what great leaders had in the midst of growing their companies. So it was coined the Stockdale Paradox. In his captivity, what Stockdale found was those who were optimists were the ones who suffered. They were the ones that were sure that at any time they were going to be rescued. And they would make plans like, we're going to be rescued by Thanksgiving. We're going to be rescued by Christmas. We're going to be rescued by Easter. And every time these imaginary deadlines would come and pass, and they would be more brokenhearted. Stockdale says these are the guys that lost it, the guys that did not survive. The ones who did survive were able to have this paradoxical outlook. On one hand was a fierce determination, the faith that they would prevail. They would live to make it home. Unwavering faith in them. But on the other edge, or other side of the paradox, is to confront the brutal circumstances in which you find yourself. Not to try to sugarcoat it, not to try to make it seem like it's going to just end immediately, but to confront it and to recognize the circumstances for what they are. Right? They're harsh. It's tough to thrive in these conditions. So the Stockdale paradox. He found the ones who were able to have faith in that they would one day make it through, they would survive their situation, but also a brutal accounting of their actual situation. Those were the ones who were able to make it. Now, what does this have to do with our text? Well, today we hear from the prophet Jeremiah. Where Jeremiah finds himself in this history of God's story. The northern kingdom of Israel had fallen a century and a half before from the Assyrian forces. And now Babylon is harassing the southern kingdom of Judah. They've already come and taken many of the great wealth and the leadership from Judah. Jeremiah finds himself in between that time, and he doesn't know it yet, but 587 BC is coming, and that is when Babylon will come in force, destroy the temple in Jerusalem, and end the kingdom of Judah. So Jeremiah hears this word of the Lord that we read today, proclaims it to those who are already in exile, and indeed those who will soon be in exile as well. Settle in for the long haul. This is not going to be a quick fix. And remember, it's judgment. God is judging the kingdom of Judah because they have strayed from the path that God had set for them. God had certain expectations for the kingdom of his chosen people. He lived unjustly. Righteousness was nowhere to be found. They listened to false prophets and worshiped foreign gods. So Jeremiah makes it as brutally plain as possible. This is going to take a while. You're going to be exiles. You're going to be strangers in a strange land for quite some time. And the number he gives is interesting. For 70 years, you will be in exile. 70 years. A lifetime. He says, not only plan to get wed and have children, but you may just see your grandchildren as well in exile. 70 years, a lifetime. But I also hear that number 7, and it does have a special place in the Bible. 7 is the number of completeness or wholeness. Right? God will take God's time to achieve God's purpose fully, completely, and perfectly. God will not short-circuit God's plans because of the voices of those who cry out unfair. The judgment has come. God has a plan. God will stick to the plan. So not only get married and have children and grandchildren, but plant a garden. Right? And here's another shocking word of Jeremiah's prophecy. Pray for the city in which you find yourself. Now, that's not to excuse the brutality and the empire ethic of Babylon, but it is to say, pray for their welfare, that they too might understand justice and righteousness, that they too might thrive, for as they thrive, you will thrive. To pray for their downfall is to short-circuit God's plan. It's to pray for your own downfall. It's as though God is saying, if I'm going to rescue somebody, somebody still better be around. Right? So stay for the long haul. Plan to be there a while. But Jeremiah assures them again and again and again of God's plan. God will free the exiles. And so here you have the Stockdale paradox. They are in Babylon. Many had been brought in chains. What they used to know, much of it has been destroyed, and even though they may one day return, it will not be to the old neighborhood. It is a bad situation. Jeremiah gives the other end of the paradox, and it's this: God will complete God's plan. You will be freed, and it's not you, your descendants. God will not abandon God's chosen people. This text is so powerful. Did I say something wrong? This text is a powerful text. Maybe you're familiar with verse 11. I'll just go back and reread that one, because again, many of us know this.
For surely I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans for your welfare and not for harm, to give you a future with hope. Now that phrase, again, a beautiful phrase, has become quite accustomed to being on a graduate's card, right? Or perhaps cross-stitched into a picture to hang on the wall. But there's two problems with that. One is it ignores the context in which we find this quote, namely verse 10, the one that immediately precedes it. Only when Babylon's 70 years are completed will I visit you. So to give it to a 17-year-old graduate is to say, when you are 87, God has good things in store for you. It's going to be a long haul until then, but when you're 87, woo, it's going to be a good time. The second problem with it is that the you, as most times quoted, is singular. In the text, it is unabashedly plural. Y'all, God has plans for God's people, not just a single person, but all of them. God established a community of people, gave a kingdom, a land, and then a kingdom. Together they experienced this. Together they faced the brutal facts of their captivity, but also together they still praise God and remember the promise that they will be freed. Now, I think it's okay to use this quote, of course, for our edification, to give us some hope, maybe to help us live into our own Stockdale paradox. From time to time, we too feel dislocated, maybe not taken to a foreign land in exile, but our life is changed in a way that sometimes we neither welcome nor understand. And sometimes we cannot see the other side of it. Sometimes we ask, how long, O Lord, will this last? So as a personal promise of God's future for us, I think it's powerful when we find ourselves in that sense of helplessness. But not to be optimistic that things are going to change the next day. In fact, we give up to God that God indeed is the one in control. So we will do what we need to do in the time that we have, trusting that one day we too will be freed from whatever situation we find ourselves in. But in the meantime, we're going to plant gardens. We're going to live as full a life as we can, trusting in God all along. Today is Christ the King Sunday, and while Jeremiah is not, at this point anyway, prophesying the coming of the Messiah, he's very much talking to the Jewish people, to Judah. I think we can understand this in a different sense, where we find ourselves as the church. We as a community of people proclaim that Jesus came, and in Jesus' ministry, death, and resurrection began the kingdom of heaven here on earth. In spots around the globe, we find pockets of the kingdom, places that are just and righteous. We find places that do not oppress, do not marginalize, where everybody has enough and no one too much. And we see these as God intends, as bright places, bright spots. But if we look around, we know that that is not the case. The things are bad, and sometimes they seem to be getting worse. This is not the earth that God intended. The church has its work cut out to proclaim, to prophesy, to say, people, this is what God is calling us to.
And we, like the exiles, like James Stockdale, don't know when Jesus is coming back. We don't know when the final day, the day of the Lord, will be here. And so until then, we work. We plant gardens of hope. We gather communities to remind one another of the God that is in control. Right? One day we say Jesus will come again, and we don't know when that will be, but until then we will live the life that God intends for us to the best of our faithful ability. It's quite a shift from the New Testament perspective. St. Paul once wrote, don't bother getting married. If you're not married already, it ain't worth the hassle, because Jesus is going to come again real soon. Oops. 2,000 years later, and Jesus has still not come back, so maybe we can reel back a bit. Nothing against St. Paul, but maybe listen to the words of Jeremiah. So, dear friends, that is my prayer for you this Christ the King Sunday, that God is at work in you, that you are honest about the situation in which we find ourselves, in which you might or your family might find themselves, whatever it is you might be going through, where you can't see the end of it, it feels like there might not be hope, but know that God is, has always been, and will ever be in control. God will free us from the powers of sin and death, however that may look.
And in the